In the early morning light, Osman, Atalan and Salida sat at the top of the burnt-out hills of the Abu Klai. From this vantage point, they overlooked a deep defile. They were seated on a fine woolen carpet, laid on the edge of the dragon's back ridge of black basalt rock. An almost identical ridge of the same dark rock faced them across the pass. At its narrowest point, it was some 400 paces across. The Emir Salida of the Yalin had known Osman since he was a stripling of 17. At that age, Osman had ridden into Yalin territory from the east with his father's raiding party. They had killed 6 of Salida's warriors and driven off 65 of his finest camels. Osman had killed his first man on that long-ago raid. The Beja had also abducted 12 Yalin girls and young women, but these, in Salida's eyes, were insignificant against the loss of his camels. In the 12 years since then, their blood feud had run red and rank across the desert. Only since the divine Mahdi, may he ever triumph over his foes, had called all the tribes of the Sudan to unite in the holy jihad against the infidel, had Osman and Salida sat at the same campfire and shared the same pipe. In jihad, all personal feuds were suspended. They were united by a common enemy. A slave girl set the hookah between them. With silver tongs, she lifted a live coal from the clay firepot and placed it carefully on top of the black tobacco packed into the bowl of the pipe. She sucked on the ivory mouthpiece until the smoke was flowing freely. She coughed prettily on the powerful fumes and passed the mouthpiece to Salida, a mark of respect for his years. The water in the tall glass jar bubbled blue as he drew the smoke through it, held it in his lungs, and passed the mouthpiece to Osman. The Mahdi had forbidden the use of tobacco, but he was in Omdurman, and Omdurman was far away. They smoked contentedly, discussing their battle plans. When there remained only ash in the pipe bowl, they knelt and prostrated themselves in the ritual of morning prayers. Then the girl lit another pipe, and at frequent intervals one of their sheikhs came up the ridge to report to them on the enemy movements and the disposition of their own regiments. "In God's name, the squadron of Sheikh Harun is in position," reported one. Salida looked at Osman from under hooded, sun-freckled eyelids. "Harun is a fine fighting man. He has 2,000 under him. I have placed him in the wadi, where the buzzard perched yesterday evening. From there he will be able to rake the enemy rear when they come out onto the plain." A short while later, another junior sheikh came up the steep slope. "In the name of God and the victorious Mahdi, the infidels have sent forward their scouts. A patrol of 6 soldiers rode through the pass as far as the mouth. They gazed through their long glasses at the palm grove of the wells, then rode back. As you ordered, mighty Emir, we let them go unhindered." An hour after sunrise, the final report came in, and all the dervish forces were in the positions allotted to them.
"What of the infidel?"
Salida asked in his rusty, high-pitched voice. "They have not yet broken camp." The messenger pointed to the head of the long defile. Salida offered his elbow to Osman, and his erstwhile enemy helped the old man to his feet. His joints were lumpy with arthritis, but once in the saddle he could ride and ply the sword like a young warrior. Careful not to show a silhouette against the early morning sky, Osman led him solicitously to the edge of the cliff, and they looked down. The infidel camp was in full view less than 2 miles away. The previous evening the soldiers had thrown up a zariba of stones and thorn bush around the perimeter. As always, the camp was in the shape of a square. They had placed a Nordenfeldt gun at each of the 4 corners so it could throw down enfilading fire on the outer walls of the stockade.
"What machines are those?"
Salida had never fought the Franks. The Turks he knew well, for he had slaughtered them in their hundreds with his own hands, but these big red-faced men were a different breed. He knew nothing of their ways.
"Those are rifles which fire very fast. They can lay down fields of dead men like grass under the scythe until they grow hot and jam. It is necessary to feed them corpses to stop up their mouths."
Salida cackled with laughter.
We will feed them well today. He made a wide gesture. The feast is ready. We await the honoured guests. The hills, valleys, and narrow gullies appeared barren and deserted. But in truth, they were alive with tens of thousands of men and horses sitting on their shields, waiting with the patience of the hunter. "What are the infidels doing now?" Salida asked curiously, as his attention went back to the enemy camp. "They are preparing for our attack." "They know that we are here waiting for them?" Al-Salida inquired. "How do they know that?" "We had a spy in our ranks, a Ferengi officer, a clever, crafty infidel. He speaks our sweet mother tongue and passes readily as a son of the Prophet. From Berber he rode northwards with our array. Doubtless he has counted our heads, divined our intentions, and gone into the infidel camp."
"What is his name? How do you know so much about him?"
"His name is Abadan Rigi. He gave me the wound at El Obaid that almost carried me to my grave. He is my blood enemy."
"Then why have you not killed him?" Salida asked in a reasonable tone.
"He is slippery as a river eel. Twice he has wriggled through my fingers," Osman said. "But that was yesterday. Today is today, and we shall count the dead at the setting of this sun."
"The infidel may not offer us battle this day," Salida demurred.
"Look," he passed Salida his telescope. The old man held it the wrong way round and peered through the large lens. Though he could see nothing but a vacant blue sky, he looked wise. Osman knew that he understood little of these infidel toys, so to spare him embarrassment, he described the scene in the British camp for him. "See how the quartermasters are passing down the ranks, handing out extra ammunition?"
"By God, you are right," Salida said,
and the telescope wavered several degrees in the wrong direction. "See how they are bringing in the Nordenfelts?"
"In the saintly name of the Mahdi, you are right."
Salida bumped his eyebrow on the brass frame of the telescope and lowered it to rub the spot. "See how the infidel mounts up, and you can hear the bugles sound the advance." Salida looked up, and without the hindrance of the lens, saw the enemy clearly for the first time.
"By the holy name of the Mahdi, you are right," said he. "Here he comes in full array."
They watched the British break camp and ride out. Their orderly ranks immediately assumed the dreaded square formation. They moved deliberately into the mouth of the defile, and no gaps appeared in their lines. Their discipline and precision were chilling, even to men of Osman and Salida's temperament. For them there is no turning back. They must win through to the water or perish, as other armies have done, swallowed by the desert.
"I will not leave them for the desert," declared Salida. "We will destroy them with the sword." He turned to Osman. "Embrace me, my beloved enemy," he said softly, "for I am old and tired. Today seems a good day to die."
Osman hugged him and kissed his withered cheeks.
"When you die, may it be with your sword in your hand."
They parted and moved down the back slope of the ridge to where the lance-bearers held their horses.